just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 420. I am Lisa Sheps. I'm joined right now by Mr. Nick Mayo. Oh, wait. Say that again. Nick Mayo. Woo-woo. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and streaming live at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Stick with us.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
It's the 4th of July.
It is Wednesday, July 5th, 2017, the day after Independence Day. Each week. Oh, what am I saying? On today's show, this is our 420th show, we have the Institution Theater and their show, The Immigrant, Immigrants, the Musical, Part 1. We'll also have news and views of the world of theater in New York, in Chicago, in Austin, and anywhere else I feel like saying. Okay, well, that was a jam. We were like sitting in the lobby just chit-chatting away, totally didn't even realize we had a show to do.
Having our tea and crumpets and catching up like we do.
We were. So that was a little rusty start. I may re-record the whole start for the podcast.
No, I think
so much
great.
So I haven't put my purse down. It's still on my shoulder. I'm like out of my mind. So it's just Nick Mayo here in the studio, but we have Nicole Shiro on the telephone. Are you there, Nicole?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Oh, you don't. She doesn't sound well, does she?
No, I have not been good. I have been sick.
Well, you're always sick to me, but I mean that in a good way.
Are you drinking your fluids, Nicole?
I am.
Good.
Well, we miss you, Jewish Nicole.
Well, let me just thank Shane for doing a wonderful International Folk Bazaar today. That was a very, very good thing. Let me introduce also, because we're hearing disembodied voices, and I want to make sure people know who we got here. And, of course, you heard Nicole Shiro. Let me just try something while you're on the phone and not well. So I have with me Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That was so good,
that
Nicole.
That was poor. Poor boy. That was just a sad Nick Squared, but in a good way. So we have here with us Asaf Ronan. Hi, Asaf.
Hi.
Hi, welcome back to the show. And we have Lahari Samanini.
Hi.
And then coming into the studio right now, coming right up to this microphone, is Mars Wright. Hello, Mars.
Howdy.
Ah, wow, that was good timing, wasn't it?
You made it.
Cool. So I need to start right off with Nicole Shiro.
Yes,
because you had a, as you described it to me, an epiphany during when you went to see The Lion King in some place called Houston, Texas.
Yes. Well, first of all, I was proud of myself because I realized in a month I've seen theater in San Antonio, Houston, and Austin, and I was very proud of myself.
As well, you should be. I'm proud of you too, Nick. Are you proud of her?
All across Texas with Nicole Shiro.
Yeah. What about you guys? Y'all proud of Nicole?
Is that how you made yourself sick? Though, is that what happened?
Probably the mold in Houston didn't help. I was there for a few days. I just have been doing a lot, but I sat and watched The Lion King. And I
always
oh my god, that made my day. It's hard not to do that. And I know it's 20 years later and we always talk about how awesome it is, but can I just tell you, it's so visually stunning. I think I could watch that show in another 40 years and still be in awe of it.
I absolutely agree. I actually went to see, you know, I saw the original cast, which blew me away. And then when it was here a few years ago, I went to see it. And the production, you know, the tour is a little tired, but it was still amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you, the cast that was in this, they had a lot of people that have been doing it on Broadway. And the boy who played Rafiki was just out of this world.
That's Lisa's part.
Which one is Rafiki?
Rafiki, the one who sings
singing ga 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 ga. I don't know their names. I know Scar.
I still get excited. I mean, it was just so exciting. The puppets, everybody just clapping, and I'm like, man, this is just a good time. So I was really happy that I was able to sit and watch that again.
Well, I'll tell you,
I really enjoyed it 20 years later, like it was the first time I saw it. Yeah.
One of the most amazing things to me from that show, and what makes Julie Taymor a genius, is the simplicity.
Genius. I want to know what goes on in her mind, man.
Well,
whoa.
You can ask Bono all about that.
Oh,
snap.
Yeah, that was a dig on Spider-Man 1.0. No, so what I found one of the most amazing things about it was during one of the group numbers, one of the African numbers, the cast was interspersed throughout the audience. They each had a stick, and the stick had a string. On the end of the string was a bird, and they just flapped those around the audience, and it was just amazing to have all these birds flying around the audience. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
They did. They had the it's the Hobby Center, and they had them down the aisles, and they had them in every single balcony,
yep,
inside the side pits, and you know all the percussion are in the side seating too, out, yep, in the audience.
Yeah, they did that in New York as well.
Lisa, I could just imagine from a stage manager's perspective that would have its challenges being on the road, because every house would be a kind of different put in,
right?
A different sort of, you know, wow. I can only imagine the show.
That would be a good thing for a stage manager, because you get to use a little bit of your staging chops.
Exactly,
and you don't get that every time.
The sound was so amazing. I looked at Amy and I said, Lisa would be blown away by the sound in here. It's everything.
Well, dear sound in Houston, come and visit Austin. We need your help.
It was amazing. Well, if you want to check out the sound, it's running till July 23rd, so you can go down to Houston, Lisa.
True.
And
why don't you give folks
to the sound.
Why don't you give folks a web address in case they want to check it out?
Broadway at the Hobby Center.
Broadway at the Hobby Center. .com. Well, I want to talk about our opening on Broadway. We had one opening on Broadway in this slow summer season.
We did.
Yes.
And this is a show that's rather dear to my heart in that it was the first show that I directed here in town.
Oh, cool.
In my first theater in town. That was Marvin's Room. And
you love that show.
I do. Well, I don't know if I love it. I like it a lot. And it certainly... Jesse Green did not like it. Did you read the review, Nick?
I did. No. He did not like it.
Oh, no. I don't know which Nick. I was all like, yeah, no.
You're Nicole. I never call you Nick.
I just went with it, man.
You went with it. Well, so he talks about Frank Rich's review in 1991 where it was off Broadway. This is its Broadway premiere. One of the funniest plays of the year, as well as one of the wisest and most moving. And then he goes on to say, it barely seems any of these things that Mr. Rich listed, though it was thoughtfully directed by Ann Kaufman. And this was with Lily Taylor, Janine Garofalo, and he's especially like Celia Weston, who I don't know.
I don't know Cecilia either, but I was
I don't
really,
know her either.
I was excited for Janine Garofalo to have her. I think this is her Broadway debut, isn't it?
It might be. I'm not sure.
But I was excited about that. I like her a lot.
I like her
well. I like her and Lily. I got excited about this casting, so that's a bummer.
Well, I think so. Other critics were a little bit less
harsh,
negative. Adam Feldman of Time Out said Lily Taylor's performance is gently weird.
If you're going to be weird, you don't want to be gently weird.
You know what? I would love that if someone wrote that about me in an odd character. I'd be like, thank you.
And Roma Torre for New York One said, this is not a morbid play. It's a very human one, told with humor, resignation, and great gobs of empathy.
You can always count on Roma to have something nice to say.
So it's interesting. When I directed this, so it's a wacky, weird comedy And Scott, oh no, I just lost his last name. Scott McPherson, who wrote this? Scott McPherson. He wrote it. His partner just passed away from AIDS when it opened, and he died not too much longer after that. And it has a lot of death themes, and it's a rich, dark comedy. My favorite character was the doctor, who is this wacky character. And when we did it here in town, when I directed it, it played him wacky. I purposely never saw the movie because I wanted to keep my mind fresh as I directed it. And I was so looking forward to seeing the movie with, because the doctor was played by
De Niro.
Bob Robert De Niro. And he plays it straight and not funny at all. I was like, oh, I was so much better of a director. I should do it. but I have a feeling. So none of the reviews were there. There were no raves.
Is this a limited run or is this a commercial like the open run?
It is.
It is limited.
A limited run through August 27th.
Oh, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll make it.
They'll be fine.
They'll make it.
Well, the summer is hard. Like it's a really tricky time to open a show. Period, because no one's in town and the tourists only want to see Hamilton.
Well, and you know Hamilton opened in the summer.
Well, but that was
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
So, speaking of other things in New York, so I love the first of the month because there's always the article in New York Times, five shows you should see if you're in New York this month. Mm-hmm. So let's go through them, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right.
Okay. Everybody seems to be very excited.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Jazz right. Hands.
She did Jazz Hands. Nicole did.
I'm doing high kicks.
You're doing high kicks. Well, one is the Hamlet. At the Public, which we've talked about ad nauseum. So are y'all familiar with the Hamlet thing?
Yes.
This is the one that has the Trumpian...
this is with Oscar Isaac.
Oh, God. I said Hamlet, and this is not... This is not Caesar. Julius Caesar is the one I was thinking of. Yeah. So I actually don't know anything about this Hamlet. What
so
do you know about it?
This is Oscar Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe... am I making it up with Fenrir Rock? Is it a Sam Gold? Let me.
I'm looking. But it is at Central Park of the Delcourt. I didn't read this because my mind told me. So Charlene Woodard is Gertrude.
Yes.
Oscar Isaac is Hamilton. Hamlet. What's wrong with me? And Keegan-Michael Key is Horatio.
That's who I was thinking of.
Oh.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is exciting. Who's directing this production?
Lisa Sheps. Sam Gold.
Gold's production. So Sam and Oscar became friends at Juilliard, and Oscar was in his fourth year when I was in my first year, and Sam was in his directing apprenticeship. And I'm sure that's where this kind of excitement began. And so they're getting to collaborate, which is super cool. If anyone doesn't know, Oscar Isaac is a phenomenal, phenomenal actor who's been in tons of things in movies and... but is incredibly
inside Llewellyn Davis.
Yeah,
it was great.
Which I never got to see. What?
Ex Machina. Wonderful, wonderful actor. So I would be super excited to see his Hamlet.
All right, well, let's go.
He's got the right intensity for it.
He does.
Also at the Delcourt is Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yay!
With Richard Poe and Felicia Rashad,
and Danny Burstein is one of the mechanicals.
Oh,
like you know, it's a good production when Danny Burstein is playing a mechanical. In Midsummer. And is this a Dan Sullivan show?
This is director Lear de Bessonnet.
Definitely not Dan Sullivan.
Lear de Bessonnet. also has Annalee Ashford, Kyle Beltran, Shalita Grant, and Alex Hernandez. It does not say anything about Richard Burstein in this.
Oh, Danny Burstein. He's one of the mechanicals.
Danny Burstein.
That's exciting. Nicole, are you playing the drums
over there?
Yeah,
what's that noise you're doing over there, Nicole Shiro?
I hit everything, and I hit speaker, and I couldn't get my little sound thing went small, and I was trying to go backwards to make it go big.
That's been my problem forever.
We've got Hamlet and Midsummer Night's Dream. What else is on the list?
Okay, at Encores Off Center is Assassins.
Ooh. Love that show.
That is playing this week. Stephen Pasquale is playing John Wilkes Booth. Director Anne Kaufman. And if you go on to, I think it's Playbill, you can see them rehearsing the finale and then one of the numbers. That just looks good. I love Assassins.
Me too.
Yeah.
People either love it or don't love it.
I love Sondheim.
He loves you too.
Oh, does he? He doesn't write.
I spoke to him. Well, he's very busy.
But I got to see the Neil Patrick Harris version.
Did you?
I
wanted to see that.
Brilliant.
It was good stuff, man. It was good stuff. Our man was in it.
What was in it? What did you say? Who was in it?
When Raul in that?
No.
No, it was Michael was in it. Michael, right?
Yes, Michael Cerveris. Yes. And yes, Dennis O'Hare.
You. Okay. Yes.
And NPH.
Yeah, I knew NPH was in it.
And Mario Joyner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love the Raul and the Michael, and sometimes I have to stop and remember which show they were in, because they were both in a lot all at the same time for a while.
Awesome. So also later in the month, off-center, is the, I don't know this show, but I love it, The Bubbly Black Girl Sheds Her Chameleon Skin.
Oh, it's a great piece.
And Nikki M. James is in it. And
love her.
Directed by Robert O'Hara. So that seems like something that was really good. So also we have at Lincoln Center, Pipeline is happening. That's all I have. And then the Lincoln Center Festival also happens this month, which has several different
It's a good time things. To go visit New York.
Yep. So let's see. What else did I want to talk about? Oh, we should talk about local a local story in the New York Times today. Quentin Johnson, who is from Austin, Texas, and is playing Hercules Mulligan in a little show called... Hamlet. Hamilton.
Oh my God, now Hamilton's Hamlet and Hamlet's Hamilton. I love it.
So he's got an article about him in the New York Times.
Wasn't that awesome, Sauce? I saw that and I was like, go Jay Quentin. That is like everything.
Yeah, pretty awesome. I, of course, took it. So the first time I saw it was on Facebook, and it was, oh my God. What's his name? Never mind. I'm going to forget it. So that was a very good thing, a nice local boy getting better. So I want to talk about... So we have a couple of Twitter things happening in the Twitter sphere that involve Broadway people. One is Ben Platt. Why don't you talk about what happened to him around the stage door issue?
Well,
I'm glad you brought this up, guys.
Go ahead, Nick Mayo.
For our listeners... Ben Platt was being trolled, which is a term for kind of assaulted on the internet, by some fans and fans' parents for not coming out of the stage door and spending time signing playbills and taking photos with the children or the teenagers who've come to see his show. But the flip side of this coin is one specific patron sent a very, very hate-filled message to him saying, how dare you, and calling him names for not coming out to greet his daughter. His daughter had been there a handful of times, and how dare he? And Ben Platt has made it a really big point to connect with his fan base, knowing that the majority of the fan base for this show are teenage boys and girls who... not only just love musical theater, but it's really speaking to a broader base of people who are suffering with some sort of anxiety issues or developmental issues, because that's what this play centers around. So he's made it a real big point to connect with that base. So when he got attacked for not coming outside to sign programs and take photos, he just responded with a very beautiful message saying, my responsibility is to the piece, and this is an incredibly demanding piece, and I try every time I possibly can to come out and greet the fans. They're the most important part of it, but the work has to be top priority, and sometimes I need to sleep. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that doing 8 shows a week, that's your job. That's all you do. You do your laundry on Mondays.
I loved what he said about, so my first responsibility is to the piece, and making sure that the whole reason why you're here, the whole reason why we won all these awards, or I won my award, mm-hmm. was that the work that I put into it, and I need to be, that has to be my truth.
And it's just not, I mean, this is, if you would like interaction and all those things, you should go to Disney World, where your children can hug on the animals. But this is, you know, I really admire him for responding with such tact. I wouldn't have had that tact. But it was really a responsible and kind response, while also drawing a firm line, which is, My job. This is my job, guys.
So, Asaf, you've wanted to say something. I've seen you try to get in here.
Well, I want to say so many things about this.
Yeah.
And what I especially loved was, so some of the things that this woman was posting of like $300 tickets and all this stuff, and I feel like what he said also directly addressed that. You're paying $300 for this theatrical experience, and I'm putting everything I have into it, and it's very taxing, right? And I thought not only did that open up the lens on what his job is, but also directly addressed some of the things that she was pointing out. But also, I feel like she followed up at one point with acting not being a tough job. And that's just incredible to me, especially considering the emotion of the piece, which obviously you're connecting with, and that's why you want to see this man, mm-hmm. to then just say, well, it's not a tough job. Well, then why do you need his autograph? Why do you need a picture with him?
Mm-hmm.
If you recognize he's doing a really good job at something that isn't easy. Otherwise, it wouldn't have attracted your attention to begin with.
Well, it is part of a larger conversation with the rise of technology. And in my day, you used to buy the cast album and learn the names that were written on the back of cast albums and save your programs and see. But, you know, now everyone's friends with them on social media or follows them. So it really does address a larger thing, which is where does the actor's responsibility end, which is at the piece? Right. It's not to refollow or like a something. It's a larger problem or a larger challenge that we have in a technology-driven society, which is how do the arts develop within that?
We need to stop assuming immediate access to everything all the time.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
But I thought he did a great job of being a gentleman with that response.
Agreed. He did. And it is interesting to when you go see shows now and seeing the lines of people outside waiting to get an autograph or whatever. And it's heartening. One of the articles I read about it would be like it was one of the podcasts I listened to. The analogy was if you're in a widget factory and if you're working your 10 hours at this widget machine and you come out and you really want to go home and just sit in front of the TV and have some food, but you have adoring fans outside that want your widget autograph. Well, at first you're going to go, well, that's really great. There's some ego around that. But after a while, it's going to become, oh, my God, I really need to go home and take care of myself. I'm
mm-hmm.
tired.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I think one of the problems for the woman who posted was she does not see that parallel because she assumes you're working 2 hours a day. It shouldn't be a problem.
That's true. It is a super duper easy job.
They assume the work doesn't start mm-hmm. until they're on the stage and the lights go
true.
Up.
And you know what? To be fair, there are so many jobs out there for people. I mean, anybody that wants to be an actor usually becomes one and is very successful at it.
Exactly.
So she's got a point. I take it all back.
It's a very wide hallway that we all fit into.
It's true. The other Twitter thing that happened today that I thought was very good is, and again, I should say here right now at this point that the opinion expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not those of the board of directors, the staff, or anybody else here at Co-op. They're simply ours. Sean Hannity and Josh Groban had a Twitter war.
What?
And evidently, now I'm not a Twitter person, so I don't do a lot of Twitter, but evidently Josh Groban is a prolific Twitterer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he retweeted a article that basically said that Trump is not doing a very good job. And he got slammed by so many Twitterers. Jim Mad Dog Maddox said, Josh, you are un-American commie traitor, and all people who love American freedom will boycott you and your lousy music. And then Josh wrote back to him, political satire is American. Criticism of our leaders is American. Freedom of speech is American. Now go blank yourself.
Lisa, what's a blank?
I can't tell you. So it's just really very, very interesting. And I love that he did it. There will be a link to this article, which shows all the different things that he said. But he's quite the Twitterer. Anybody else here a Twitterer?
You know what he was saying? You raised me up.
And now there's the other Twitter fiasco aimed towards NPR. Did you see that?
No, I'm not a Twitterer. Tell us about it.
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to talk right into the microphone.
Every year, NPR does readings of the Declaration of Independence, and they also accompany it with tweeting it out. And various Trump supporters got on there and assumed that they did not realize what they were quoting and assumed NPR was trying to stoke a revolution.
Oh, no, really?
Yes. And that when they're talking about the king, they're talking about Trump.
Oh, no. Wow.
And but they were getting lots of threats.
They
and
were
stuff.
Literally tweeting the Constitution or the Declaration,
Declaration
of Independence,
as right? they do every year for the last 29 years. They've
but
been
it's
doing
a different
this.
Year.
Yes. It is a different year.
Well, we amazing are, what a difference context makes, doesn't yeah. it?
We are running out of time in this section, but I did want to take one time to talk about, did you hear this thing about Edward Albee?
Burn it! Burn his material!
So it's so interesting. So Edward Albee, in his will, said he's telling his executors to destroy any unfinished work. And it's really interesting talking about all this. And I, of course, went to, oddly enough, another show I directed called Kafka's Blank, which is a organ of the male body, which is talks about Franz Kafka, who basically said the same thing to his friend when he died, destroy all my work. And his friend did not, thank God, because a lot of this stuff stayed. I think including the... who's the one about the beetle, the roach? What's that one?
Metamorphosis.
Metamorphosis. Thank you. You do not want to be me. But I thought that this was interesting, and a lot of people weighed in on whether they think that it is that the artist's wishes should be honored or not honored. I want to open it up to our guests here. Do y'all
honored.
Have an opinion? Honored.
Honored.
So
honored.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't feel
Yeah, I don't
way.
Know. I'm kind of torn with that one.
I'm torn. To me, I'd say honor it till, I mean, keep it hidden till a certain amount of time. But, I mean, can you think of the how great it would find unfinished works of anybody, Shakespeare or anybody, and be able right. to see a little bit of the artistic process?
Yeah, but once again, that's the whole, we don't need to have access to it. I mean, we already live in a world
where...
I don't
know we don't need to, but wouldn't it be great?
We already lived in a world before this announcement where those works didn't exist. So nothing has changed for us.
No.
Oh, I didn't say that either. But there's the world is... you have things like Long Day's Journey to Night where Eugene O'Neill said it can't be performed until 25 years after my death. And thankfully, his widows gave it up, and it was performed two years after his death.
And listen, this is real snarky of me, but I love Edward Albee, but it's quite grand of him. I mean, he's done some great work, but it's quite grand to be like, when I am dead, burn all my writings. It's like, okay, all right, Edward. Yes, I get it. You're very, very talented, but we might have done that anyway, dude.
But that
now you're making a thing of it.
That is the way he was, though.
Yeah, that's how he lived his life.
It's true.
But it's very grand of him, and I love him. And he's super cool and super talented. You've given us some great things, but it's quite grand.
So
and
legally, it's gray. So this will be a fight that goes on for a while because there are several things. One specifically, there's one piece that he had basically finished, but not quite, and it was set to be produced a couple of times. I'm going to try to, then he pulled it at the last minute, saying it's not really. It's called "Laying an Egg," about a middle-aged woman struggling to become pregnant.
Well, he should have set some deadlines. Pardon the pun.
Okay. With that, we will take a little break and listen to a little piece from Yank, which is a musical about two...
Gay soldiers.
Gay soldiers. That's the easy way to say it. Let's listen to Yank, and then we will come back and talk to our guests. We'll be right back.
Yank, the serviceman's journal.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo. And we have been speaking with... Lahari Samanini, Mars Wright, and Mr. Asaf Ronan. We also had on the line Miss Nicole Shiro, who has dropped off the line. So we send her love and hope that she feels better.
Hydrate, so, Nicole.
Hydrate, Nicole. So while we were on the break, I asked for a number between 2 and 54. Can you remember? I'm sorry. Mars. I don't know why I find that a difficult name to remember.
That's okay.
What did you say?
53.
Great. Let's see what that is in just about a second. Oh, you know what?
What have I done?
You've
created mayhem, Mars.
You have created mayhem, and you know what? We don't go. We don't go up to 53. So
I think he said 23.
No,
that sounds
he
right.
said 51 is what he said.
I was just giving
and
us.
Here
a
we go.
Hey, we're at Comedy Sports Austin! You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM!
Do something funny!
Do something funny! Thank you.
That is so appropriate for our guests.
It is.
That could not be more appropriate.
Such serendipity.
Comedy Sports Austin no longer exists, if I remember correctly. Comedy Sports in Austin.
Oh, really?
I don't believe there's a comedy sports troupe here anymore.
I have not heard of it.
You know what we need? If we had some people who like ran an improvisational theater, they would know.
They would know.
We should ask them.
Let's call them.
It's growing in so many other ways that sometimes we lose track of who falls off the wagon, I guess.
So speaking of that, we're here talking to the Institution Theater. And we have here from the Institution Theater, Asaf Ronan, who is the Education Director.
Yes.
And do you have more titles than that? Seems like you're...
Marketing Director, Education Director, Teacher, Performer, Director.
God.
Name a title. Pick a title, any title.
Yes. And then the creator of Immigrants, the musical Part 1, is Lahari Samimi.
Yes.
Did I pronounce that last
name? It's Lahari Samimi.
What did I say? Who knows? and then Hamilton. Mars Wright, who is one of the actors in this. Did I say Hamilton?
You said Hamilton again, yeah.
That just makes
you
no
said
sense.
Mars?
You? Okay. What kind I'm of 4th so of July did you have, Lisa? You have not recovered from
it. A very
depressing
one. Oh. Thank you very much. Lahari, tell me about this show.
So I was listening to Hamilton, the musical, for 6 months straight, and I was...
Seriously, without stopping?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I drove my husband insane. But I one day came to me that Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton, was an immigrant, and so was my father, and they've always tried to push my father to write a book about his... coming here from India in the 1960s, and he's working on it slowly. But for me, it was a connection that would have been great to see this on stage in some type of form. And I believe when I thought more and more about the immigration story, there are so many other immigrants that come into this country, as we all know. And to get all those stories into a musical to be told to everyone, yeah. That was how I came up with the idea, and I pitched it to the Institution Theater, and they said okay.
So this is a mostly improvised piece, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
so
completely tell us improvised.
Piece. Yes.
Didn't you tell me the opening number was not improvised?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us about how that manifests itself. What could we come and see, what could we expect to see when we sit down and see the show?
So you will see an improvised play of person who is an immigrant or a child of immigrants and their battle every day to combat microaggressions, to fit into society, and to also tell the story of how their parents came here or in some way how their parents influenced them.
Mm-hmm. And how many people are in the company?
This cast is
11.
11 people.
11,
and
yeah.
9 to 8 people per night.
Great. And how many, I mean, we're all descendants of immigrants, so...
Right. how recent?
How many first generation I mean, I know you don't have stats off the top of your head,
right.
But that sounds like an amazing conversation to sit around and have drinks with a bunch of first generations or second generation immigrants about a piece. How many people in the cast talk about that?
Two people are descendants.
Our
immigrants, right?
Our immigrants themselves, yes. Many first-generation immigrants. We have a Filipino immigrant in the cast. We have a first-generation Vietnamese woman in the cast. We have a first-generation Irish woman in the cast. Mars is...
First-generation.
First-generation.
Yeah.
Filipino. And African-American,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow, wonderful, like what a beautiful part of the collaborative process to... as we all sit down and get to know each other to create a piece with that energy in the room. That's exciting. That excites me.
Now, you also have guest performers every show,
no,
correct?
No, we don't have guest performers. Oh, that was originally a thought that we were going to do, but as we got more and more into the process, it was like one of the things that we encountered in this is none of us have had the experience to be in a group this diverse to focus on those individual stories before. Right. So we didn't know how to approach it and how to support each other. Mm-hmm. So if Sushant, for example, is talking, he's a first generation Indian American, talking about his experience, how do we support that with our limited knowledge of that culture and his specific story? And so bringing guest performers into that would have just been another level of difficulty. Yeah.
Sure. And what is some of the structure within the improvisation? Talk a little bit about where you, how you take us as an audience on a journey. How does it, how do we start? Or is it all devised and improv night by night?
I mean, there's a structure to it that we hit pretty firmly in rehearsal and then let that go.
Great.
So the structure stays in the players' heads the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's beats we're chasing, but largely everyone's just taking chances. There's this narrative, but, you know, so there's, we're doing things like, I'm your conscience. Mm-hmm. I'm not a real person. I'm not here. You're looking into a mirror right now. You're talking to yourself, but you're really talking to me. So there are experimental devices, but still with the structure of, we want to tell this story, you know, an hour and 15 minutes.
Mars, what have you learned about yourself throughout the process? This sounds like something that's a cause for great self-exploration. And what have you learned?
Oh,
you have
boy.
No idea.
Wow.
That's a tough question.
That's a rough one. No, it's a continuation. Because I grew up largely, my mother was Filipino, so she raised me largely culturally Filipino. And my dad's black, and so every now and then I'll shift between black and Filipino. I'm pretty mixed. And so seeing people that are like one culture, I feel extra mixed in the cast. And trying to think of the story from that perspective, where I'm not just representing a single thread of immigrant culture. It's
two things happening at once.
Yeah, it's this melting pot that is America, right? I feel like I'm embodying somewhat
of
that experience.
When,
I
love that. So we know we have an opening number. Do we have improvised music throughout as well?
Yes.
Yes.
And okay. That is directed by Tosin Owofeso. He's an incredible improvised musician.
Wonderful. Singing and rapping, not necessarily full songs, drifting in and out. We were very much inspired by Hamilton in regards to drifting.
Okay.
And a lot of the techniques that Mars talked about is we also use song to kind of relay that information, and it's quite powerful to see it on stage.
Yeah. The one thing we know every night is one person is going to be lead. And they're going to step forward at the start of the show after the opening number and tell a little bit of this, their story and what themes are coming to play. And what's been especially interesting is that we've had people telling their story featuring people that have been in the audience that we have been playing without knowing that they're in the audience.
That's really cool.
Right? Wow.
And in some cases, there's certain cast members that have really pushed themselves to address things that they've never said to their parents who are now in the audience.
Oh, no.
Or we had one gentleman who had a 7-year-old daughter. He decided to bring his 7-year-old daughter and talk about how do I become a better father to her, and how do I become a better Filipino father. Of like he felt like he hadn't really been bringing that cultural experience into her life. She doesn't... she doesn't think of herself as Filipino. And so addressing that, and she's in the audience, and she actually came up on stage during the show and hugged him. Yes, the 7-year-old. And yeah, everybody just broke. I mean, that was lots of tears that night.
Wow. So Mars, have you had your lead day yet?
I have.
So tell us about it.
I try to hit the point, again, of being mixed race and telling from my perspective, not necessarily an immigration story, but just the effect of immigration.
Being a first generation.
Being a first generation and not being one culture.
Right. That seems to me to be sort of a tough thing because, you know, we all... My immigration story is one culture.
Yeah.
Many of our immigration stories is one culture, but to be multicultural and one of those cultures not be typical American, you know, white American, then that's got to be a clash of cultures.
Yeah.
And a cool story, I imagine.
Yeah. And even within families, you get, you know, the clashing culture. Yeah.
Mars had a very particularly interesting take that he showed up that
night with. I've got a 3-year-old daughter, and I played as her, embodied her, but 20 years into the future. So thinking about how, you know, the second generation, because I'm not, like, I was fortunate enough that my mother cooks for me, so I still get a lot of Filipino culture, but I don't cook Filipino food. I don't speak the language, you know, so I barely occupy Filipino cultural space. So my daughter probably won't get very much of that. And how does that trickle down effect go? And how does she retain identity in that regard? Or does she need to retain identity in that regard, being America the way it's going and this, you know, everybody blending together?
And we improvise that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Awesome. How
beyond
cool.
That story, beyond him putting that out there, this is what I want to focus on. We as a group improvised from there.
Great. Well, let's take a little break. I want to talk more about that, but we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back and talk about some local stuff, and then we're going to pick up with more of Immigrants, the Musical, Part 1. Right. We will be right back.
I like America.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo. We've been speaking to Asaf Ronan, Lahari Samanini, and Mars Wright.
You got the thumbs up.
I did, finally.
You did.
I'm just, I'm really bad, I bet. There you go.
My favorite part of every show, every time I've been here, Lisa, is you sometimes, like, the tension in your body as you're about to read a name. I remember the first few times I came here. That tension has subsided.
Yes, because I did not pronounce your name properly at first.
You still don't, but it's fine.
What is it?
It's Ronan, but,
well, why
but
don't
everybody
you tell
says
me?
Because it doesn't matter to me.
Oh, I vase.
I've heard so many variations of my name that I don't correct anymore.
Well, you should. Okay, so that was actually I Like America from Cowardly Custard. I was trying to find Immigrant song.
I love that you picked that.
Yeah, it's fun. I don't know anything about it. Do you?
Nick Westrate and I did a tour of Cowardly Custard through Michigan when we were teenagers. And let me tell you, no one likes teenagers doing Noel Coward. No one likes it. No matter who says it's a good idea, and especially in the Midwest, it's a horrible idea.
Yeah, because Midwest is an East Coast elite. Yeah.
Turns out, like, Saginaw doesn't like teenagers doing Cowardy Custard. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. Like a bunch of 13-year-olds? No, it's not cute.
That's true. So, yes, so that's it. We've played several things from that album, Cowardly Custard. It's a great album.
Great album.
So I want to talk right away, and you are working on this, so I want folks to know about it. That will come on our show at some point. But Summerstock Austin is
kicked off.
Has it been kicked off?
It's kicked off.
It's kicked off. So this year, tell us what shows they're doing. There's always three shows at the Long Center.
Yes. This year, Summerstock Austin is doing Annie Get Your Gun, directed by Scott Thompson. Spamalot, directed by Ginger Morris, and Alan Robertson's new piece called A Shoe Story, which is quite fitting with what we're talking about. It's a story of an immigrant shoemaker. It's a theater for all audiences.
Awesome. There you go. Yeah, and Alan Robertson does there's a new one every year.
Yeah, he does some great stuff. This one's really, really, really great. I'm excited about it. We're rehearsing right now with the School for the Deaf. And they've been wonderful hosts to us, and we'll move into the Long Center next week. So Summerstock Austin.
Nice. Great. Knock and so down. That, so folks should know that if you don't know, that was a program that started probably 12, 13 years ago with Michael McKelvey and Ginger Morris doing it together. And now Ginger's taken it over now that Michael is off in New Orleans doing, wonderful things and basically coming here to do his, Dr. Mister Productions.
Yeah, it's been a really cool thing to discover it, and Stock is such a wonderful energy where you have lead actors going and sewing costumes when they're not on stage. And
Stock is it's a dying thing, and I think it's great that these kids are getting that. These are high school and some college.
The majority of ours are college students, and we have some high school students.
Like I said, it's college and some high school.
Some. Yeah, it's really cool. It's an exciting thing. And there's so many returning. You know, it's so nice when Austin has such great talent that goes off into the world and goes and studies in college, and then they want to come back in the summer and be a part of Summerstock Austin, which helped them get there. So it's a fun energy.
Do you have anything else locally you wanted to highlight before we move on to Today in Theater History?
I'd like to highlight Immigrants the Musical, and other than that, no.
Immigrants the Musical, part one.
Part one. Part two. I don't know about part two.
We're
going to
talk
speak
all about
it.
Part two in the second part of our interview. see what I did there? So let's talk about today in theater history. 1938, somebody named Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the American National Theater and Academy Bill. for self-supporting national theater. And so that is ANTA. And it has basically worked with the American Repertory Theater and Experimental Theater to have sort of a national theater. I don't know how active that is anymore or whether it even
but,
is.
I mean, thanks for it.
Thanks, FDR.
Thanks, FDR.
I'm sure it will be cut this year or next.
Oh, totally.
Thanks, FDR, anyway.
So this is an interesting... I never had this one as this type of thing as one of our theater history things. In 1962, this is the anniversary of Lanford Wilson arriving in New York, which I think is interesting. So Lanford...
Like he just landed at LaGuardia? They marked it?
Well, he arrives in New York, so I don't know. But he wrote, among other things, 5th of July.
Burn This,
and other things. 2012, I totally forgot about this, but this was the Alan Cumming's Macbeth, where he did the one-person Macbeth that did some crazy stuff, and it looked really, really interesting for a limited Broadway run. In 2014, this is the anniversary of the death of Rosemary Murphy, who I think I met, but I can't remember whether I did or not. Okay, that's it. Birthdays. Oh, boy, when did I lose control? Before I ever started.
When did you have it?
It didn't. Jean Cocteau in 1889. You remember that, Nick?
Jean Cocteau.
Catherine Hellman of the Little Foxes fame in 1928. Edie Falco. In 1963. I hate when people are younger than me.
Oh, I love me some Edie Falco.
Locally, it's today's birthday of Tom Swift. And tomorrow we have Mr. Jeff Hinkle and Catherine Catmull and Graham Schmidt.
I love that.
Dun, 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 dun.
When I first moved to Austin, I read an article by Catherine Catmull and I sent her a letter, like an old school letter, and said, hey, thank you for writing your cool article. And she wrote me back and she made me feel welcome in Austin. So happy birthday.
She's a very talented woman, and her and her husband, Ken Webster, do a lot of really good work over at Hyde Park Theater.
She was very nice to answer my...
HydeParkTheater.org. So take a look. Let's take a break. We'll hear a little bit of Alan Cumming doing a little bit of Hedvig.
I look back on where I'm from.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps, Nick Mayo. I never know when it's going to happen. We have been talking to the folks at the Institution Theater. We've been talking to Asaf, who I'm not going to even start trying to do your last name anymore. Lahari Samanini and Mars Wright. We talk about the show, Immigrants the Musical Part 1. Before we go any further, I should have said something before. Tell folks the web address that people can go to get more information.
Theinstitutiontheater.com. That's theinstitutiontheater.com.
With an E-R.
With an E-R in theater. Yes.
Yeah, we do have to say that. If it's R-E, we don't have to say it because the R-E, of course, is the correct way to do it.
You're such a punk.
No, the ER is Nathaniel Webster is very approving of the ER.
Yes.
Anyway. Okay. So, part one. When is part two?
When is part two?
When is part two?
When is part two?
I don't know. We may premiere it as part of the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival happening at the end of August. But right now, this has been such an interesting process and taking so much of our focus and our energy. We weren't even sure if there would be a part two. Part one was possibly a joke, possibly a promise. We weren't sure.
I see.
And in the process of this, it was like, oh yeah, we're going to do a part two. So we haven't discussed what exactly that's going to look like yet.
Got it. So speaking of jokes, so when we think of improv theater, we are usually thinking comedy. But in our discussions, this doesn't sound like a comedy to me. And I know that improv can be thoughtful, provoking, and not necessarily comedic. Do we laugh here when we come see the show?
Sorry, yes, you do. You laugh quite a bit.
Okay.
Because there's so many honest elements that improv brings out that it just one other aspect we do in the show that we forgot to address. I don't know if we addressed it, but we do have people of white people in the cast, and sometimes they don't understand, or
people,
even
people of white.
People of white.
I think that's a song.
Yeah,
people of non-color.
White people. All right. So, or people that are not familiar with each other's cultures, they just kind of step out of their character in a moment, you know, and kind of break the fourth wall and ask, hey, what did you eat? Like if someone said, hey, I made that Filipino dish that you really love. And that person was like, steps out, I don't know what that would be. Like, what was it? And then they would say, adobo, right? Yeah, that's it.
There's a lot of fun to be had in meandering around the culture and people guessing and hedging bets and thusly being shut down.
I bet it also opens our eyes, creators' eyes, and audiences' eyes to our own unintentional ignorance.
That's exactly what it is.
I have to say that not only is the show funny, I feel like in all my 26 years of doing improv, the laughs that have occurred during the show are some of the deepest laughs I've ever seen an audience have, because we've had a vastly diverse audience, and we do a talk back afterwards, so because we really want to hear from our audience, feedback the thoughts, and it's amazing how many times they say, yes, I've had that experience, or that really resonated with me in this very particular way, and they're laughing from that place that doesn't often get addressed in an improv show, especially. Right.
Well, here's what I, as I'm listening to you guys, that I'm responding and I find interesting, which is the sort of reverence we have around immigration currently and the sort of fear that people have about talking about it and then putting it in the context of improvisation and kind of having a stab at the conversation from that angle instead of, there's so much angst around it right now, justifiably as there should be, but to put that in the context of an improvisation, which might not be your first choice. An improv about immigration would not be the first thing that would come to someone's mind. I think it's exciting to see that. Yes. And I could see why people would laugh in a different quality, because it sits in a different place.
Definitely.
The cast is overall very funny, and they're one of the the group of the funniest people I've ever encountered. The thing about what's happening now, I believe we're all emotionally raw at some point. We don't address it in the show, really. I mean, we have sort of in the past, but we're coming out of a place of vulnerability and rawness that I think can be seen. But not every week we discuss, oh, the ICE agents are coming in. You know, it's not like that. It's more of you know, this is my story. This is my father's story. This is what we've seen.
And I'm thinking it's probably very important to, especially those of us that are not very happy with the way immigrants are being treated currently and recently in our country. But it's probably got to be really good to see and to be able to laugh and see real human interactions around immigration and not be this hammer that keeps hitting us over the head.
Stories aren't being told ever, really. I mean, of course, Master of None and Dear White People are probably some of the shows that actually
two
address
excellent
it.
Shows.
Yes, very, very good shows.
Strong reference points for us,
yes,
I would imagine.
Throughout. And I think Hasan Minhaj did a Netflix special, which was actually brilliant. But those encounter like the Indian Indian subculture. I want to know more about other cultures. You know, I don't. I don't know if that story's been told.
Yeah, a lot of the takeaway too is I think if I was in the audience, there you get to see people working it out on stage. You know, I don't know that I've ever seen people working it out without immediately feeling shame or guilt about. Can I ask you what you're wearing? Can I ask you how to pronounce your name? Can I act like there's shame? There's associated shame and guilt with that. There shouldn't be. You know, it should just be a matter of fact. I'm doing this wrong. Can you correct me? Great. Let's move on.
And we should be totally okay with that. Yes. Well, unfortunately, we're completely out of time. You guys have already opened. You got one more weekend left, right?
Yes. This weekend, yeah.
And where is this theater that you guys are playing at?
3708 Woodbury Drive in South Austin, just off of Ben White.
Yep. It's really near Penfield for those that need a reference.
Awesome.
Once again, give that website for folks.
TheInstitutionTheater.com, theater with an E-R.
Spelled the correct way. Yeah, I can slide both ways.
Pick a side, Sheps. Pick a side.
Thank you, guys. Well, no, my slide. Yeah. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Hopefully all of you or some of you can stick around and join us backstage. We would really, really like that. So that was Asaf Ronin.
Yeah.
Okay. Lahari Samanini and Mars Wright of the Institution Theaters Immigrants, the Musical, Part 1.
playing now, closing this weekend. For more information, you may visit theinstitutiontheater.com, and we will be right back. This is from Rags.
What's that music playing now?
What a fun show. I like it when we only have one guest. It gives us a lot more time to
dig in. Especially with this conversation. It's a really, really important one.
It is. It's important through the world, and it was nice that I love your questions, Nick Mayo.
Well, I love the fact that you give me an opportunity to stand next to you and ask questions of really talented people.
No, I love this mutual admiration society.
Yeah,
I love our guests. Our guests are great.
We do have great guests. And you know what else I love? KOOP.
Hornsby Austin. All of them. HD3. HD anything. I love Tracy Schultz.
I love Tracy Schultz, too.
Here in the house, and he is getting ready to do Austin Monitor News, which is coming up next if you're sitting here listening to us on terrestrial radio. Those of you that are listening to the podcast, stick around. We're going to go backstage and talk a little bit more to our guests and get a little bit more insight into who they are.
Yes.
Who they is.
And
who they be.
And in the meantime, you can go see some theater in Austin.
That's right. Please go see theater in Austin. And as far as we're concerned, you can like us on Facebook. You can tweet us on Twitter. We're on Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you want us, you can just go onto our website and click on us, enter your information, and we'll arrive in your inbox.
Right in your mailbox on Thursday morning. It'll be right there with you, and you can hear all of us. And let's do a collective sending good vibes out to Ms. Nicole Shiro, who's not feeling well today.
Yes.
But was well enough to get on the phone and talk to us, which I think is really, really good. We're going to go out with this show called First Daughter, which is a New York Shakespeare Festival show about first daughters.
Hey, I like it.
It's amazing. And this song is specifically called Daughters Of. We will see you guys next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye.
Daughters of presidents, daughters.
Well, the curtain has just come down on I Can't Control Anything, the musical. Story of a hapless young woman that just cannot be in control of anything, learning to accept that, but refuses, et cetera, et cetera. So here we are. We're backstage. We've left the stage door. We've gone down the stairs. We are sitting down here next to the dumpsters with our feet in puddles of God knows what. and bees. There are bees here. And we have joining us Asaf Ronan.
Yes.
You see, now you're going to laugh at me every time I try to.
I'm going to laugh every time you do that little try on the way to saying the name.
Because how long have I been pronouncing your name the other way?
I'm going to track.
We're going to tell you a story of this as soon as I finish here. Right. Mars Wright.
Hello.
And Lahari Samanini. Samanini.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to get it. I want that A to be soft. Consider changing it.
Well, I am changing my name. I just got married. So.
Oh, Mazel Tov, as my people say. We're going to talk about that in a second.
Right. Awesome.
So here at Backstage, we talk to you about you, not necessarily your show. So we want to learn more about you. But I will tell this story about names. So I was working with this person for about a year. And his name was, well, as I pronounced it, Seth Swoboda. And I worked with him for a year or so, and I was somewhere where he introduced himself as Seth Swoboda. And I looked at him and I said, I've been mispronouncing your name for a year. And he said, I know. I said, why didn't you say anything? I think we should pronounce the names of people the way they want to. So so I am so Asaf Ronan at this point because it's been so long.
Which is fine.
I'm switching.
You're not the only one.
Asaf Ronan. And I'm going to make this little.
Ronan, more people have reference for Ronan, you know, the movie, the. There's a comic book running, you know,
the archetypes.
And it's one of those things. It's like, do I want to have this conversation every single time someone mispronounces it? If they ask me, I'll tell them. But then beyond that, it's like.
I do. I say it every time somebody mispronounces my name, Lisa, which is my name is actually pronounced Lisa. But many people just say Lisa. Uh-huh. But I let that happen.
Right. You got to pick your battles.
You do. You do.
Lisa.
Yeah. Well, see, now you got it. So that's funny. Lahari, you're getting married.
Oh, I got married.
Got married.
October.
October, the year of the month of my birth.
Oh, nice.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
As my people say. So how did you find yourself
in the world of theater? Where, what's your background?
Actually, I'm an engineer. I mm-hmm. work
on a train. Do you wear the hat?
No, I work in a tech company. Okay. I've worked in tech ever since I moved here in 2000. Since
That's
I
so
graduated.
Odd. Not many people do that.
I know, right? There's so not many tech people in this town.
There's
oh.
it's a, and so, just so not many.
So not many tech people in improv
either. Yeah.
Oh, are yeah. there a lot of tech people in improv?
Oh, yes.
Tons.
Really?
Many of which who have come up to me and told and have told me the reason they took improv was to help with their social skills.
Okay.
Sometimes they've been told that it would be helpful for
which
the
yeah, you and I just talked about this the other day in terms yes. of helping improv being very helpful to business skills.
Yeah, changing corporate culture and mm-hmm, communication mm-hmm. skills.
Awesome. So
I tried to do stand up. I wanted some. It was around the
wow
the great I guess recession in 2008-2009 mm-hmm. and. Even after that, tensions were really kind of high and it was a demanding job. So I wanted an outlet to do something. So I did stand up and I didn't really take to it. And my friend's like, well, hey, let's start doing improv classes. So I've been doing improv for about 4 years now.
Wow. Stand up is I find stand up so hard because as opposed to other artistic forms where the audience really mm-hmm. wants you to survive, they're really on your
side.
When you're doing improv, they're on your side. They want you to do mm-hmm. well. But on stand up, they have their arms crossed and yeah. it is prove it. And it's so
yeah.
cruel. And I think you have to have a special amount of courage to do that. So I even trying, I don't have that kind of courage.
Yeah, I actually find initially stand up to be a lot easier than improv because you control what you say and you can deliver how you say it. And whether
so
the
no yes anding,
no
for
yes
you.
Anding, but I prefer improv to stand up any day now.
So, did you did you take, I'm assuming you took
yes.
classes at the institution?
Yes, I took classes at the institution.
Mars, did you as well?
I did, yeah. Probably about 5 years ago, six
yeah,
years ago.
It's been, mm-hmm.
it's been a while.
He's and been we, away, and now he's back,
that's
which
right.
we're very happy about.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of improv theater, so, you know, Coldtown, Hideout, I've taken classes
there's
at
five.
Hideout.
We have five.
Yeah.
I mean, we support Works. Five theaters, which right. I think is pretty incredible.
Five schools. Yeah. Merlin Works, I think, is starting to make their move towards a more permanent space.
Right, but I mean, they're permanently at Zach,
yeah,
currently.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think that's a really wonderful thing about Austin. We've talked about this. I've heard that we're like number three, Chicago, L.A.,
it's Chicago, Austin. L.A., New York, and then
New York.
Austin.
Oh, I forgot about New York. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty
yeah,
cool.
Definitely.
And I thank Asaf Ronen specifically for that success.
Well, I thank other people, so that's fine. You can you can put it on me, and I'll just deflect it like I do anyway.
So. It's true. So, Lahari, did you do theater? Have you done theater at all, like a scripted pieces?
No, I took a class in college, and I may have taken a class a couple years ago, a night class on it. But I have not. I've never done scripted theater.
Cool. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Paducah, Kentucky.
Really?
Yes.
Paducah, Kentucky. I don't think I know anybody from Paducah, Kentucky.
Well, now you do.
Now you do. Mm-hmm.
And what were you talking about before? Are you first generation?
I'm first generation.
So clearly your parents came from India?
Correct.
Is there a big Indian population in Paducah, Kentucky?
Actually, there wasn't at the time, and now it's growing. Mm-hmm. More and more people bring their families to come in and pay for education or pay for their way to come in, and they set up, you know, like, we have one of my mother's friends' husband kind of got most of his a lot of people over and open up medical practices in that mm-hmm. same town, doing the same thing. But it's yeah. kind of cool.
The Sammaninis are trendsetters.
Yeah, right.
Doctor trendsetters.
But yeah. mostly it was we would be friends with a lot of the Indian people in the surrounding towns. Like, and we lived Paducah, Kentucky's at the. It's kind of near the tri-state area. It's the corner of northwestern Kentucky, and it borders along Metropolis, Illinois, and parts of Missouri and Tennessee. So we would all gather around and, you know.
Gather party. Around, folks. Come
gather
on
around.
To Kentucky.
Yeah.
How?
We'd drive. It was like 60 minutes.
What was the means of like even connecting?
Oh, I don't know.
Because that was pre internet.
Yes, pre-internet. Group, right.
Know, news groups or even, right. Right.
What was the means Facebook. Of anything pre-internet? I don't right. remember.
I don't know.
Days.
Oh,
like... you, be quiet, young man.
Well, my mother is very interesting. So she would see an Indian couple at the mall or at the downtown, and she would kind of stare at them and then kind of go up to them and say, hey, where are you from? Oh. And then they would say, oh, I'm from, you know, India. And then they would have a conversation, and then they would get phone numbers. Yes. This is the good old days.
Having met your mom, that sounds so right for
I know,
her.
Right?
So right.
My mother has come to the show quite a bit.
Mars, where did you grow up?
San Antonio, Texas, largely.
I've heard of that place. It's a little south of here.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay.
It's basically.
Why mostly? Suburb. Where else were you?
Spent some time in Nebraska, spent some time in Las Vegas. My dad was in the Air Force, okay. which is why I grew up largely in San Antonio, Texas.
Ah, I see. Did was he a pilot? Is
nope.
he a pilot?
He was a singer.
Ah, with the in the Air Force band.
Yeah, Tops and Blue.
Oh, awesome! Yeah. So I had a very dear friend that was in the Army band. He and his wife. That's amazing. Is he still doing it?
No, he's retired now. He was in 22 years. He's mm-hmm. been retired for a while.
So. Wow. So I was so last night I watched it. And maybe some of you watched the Macy's fireworks.
Negative. No,
and they
no.
had the West Point band, and then they sang all the – I thought it was actually really sweet. They sang the – what are they, theme songs? I don't know what you'd call it. For each branch
anthems.
Of the service, the anthem for the service. So Anchors Away, and then the Air Force one, which I don't know what it's called. And then, of course, the cameras would cut away to somebody from that service field singing along. It was really, really, really sweet. But they had singers that were – part of the group, and so one doesn't think of serving your country in that way, but it's
yeah.
still a very vital thing that they do.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them. I mean, it's not just musicians. Also, there's like theater companies and then the branches, and they exist. Yeah.
So you did not take that. You did not join the service.
No.
How'd you find your way to doing theater and or improv?
I took improv classes briefly in Chicago and then moved to
where?
Austin. I was at Comedy Sports.
Oh, did you? Yeah, I know. I was a member of the Comedy Sports minor leagues in Chicago.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I liked Comedy Sports. Were they still on Halsted and Belmont?
If that's right
at the WNEP Theater?
If that's right under the red line, then yes.
No, it's not.
No.
It was there was no Halsted and whatever.
It was off of Belmont.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that's cool. That's cool. I like that I got my first improv training at Comedy Sports mm-hmm. because of the rules of you can't go blue right. in Comedy Sports. And I think that exercise is a really nice muscle because I think going blue is an easy thing, is an easy crutch.
But they didn't enforce that in classes, though, did they?
Yeah, they did.
In classes as well.
Yeah, never went blue.
Okay.
In Chicago.
Right.
So, because it was all based on the show itself, which is interesting. In taking the only other place I've taken improv classes was at the institution, which was much more academic and much more didactic in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. And I got a lot more theory at the institution mm-hmm. than I did at Comedy Sports.
Hopefully theory without getting heady. Sometimes I worry that
sometimes it gets heady, sometimes not. So
right.
so I enjoyed it. Good. I had a good time. I went through all six Thing Mahojes.
You're a graduate.
I am a graduate. I have a picture with Asaf Ronan.
Yes.
Not Asaf Ronan, because that's what his name was, with my graduation picture with Mr. Tom Booker.
Yeah.
So you were in Chicago. What were you doing in Chicago? Because you didn't that wasn't in your list.
No, I was working at a soup kitchen.
Uh-huh.
For a year.
Good for you.
So that was fun.
So you're a do-gooder?
Sure. I also just wanted to live in Chicago, and the soup kitchen opportunity presented itself. I did some good.
Don't discount what you did. It was good.
Okay.
So Chicago's a great town,
and
why would you ever leave?
It was cold, and I missed my mom.
Oh, that is super sweet. What's her name?
Irene.
Shout out to Irene.
What up, Mom?
And, I forgot to ask, what's your husband's name?
Christopher.
Shout out to Christopher.
Hey.
And shout out to Emily.
Yes.
Hey.
And shout out to my dog, because that's all I got. So have you ever done theater?
Yeah, I did some community theater in San Antonio, musical mm-hmm. theater. I did Rocky Horror Picture Show, Jesus Christ Superstar, Cats.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What was your favorite? What was your favorite
the
musical?
The look on
that
your
you
face
did?
As you said "Cats" is so funny.
And then the esque-ness.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad it's universally detested.
Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, Jesus Christ Superstar. I was Judas, so it was amazing.
Oh, bad. Yeah.
And what's Judas's big number?
He gets the top song.
I love that. Yeah. I love the riff.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the name of the song?
Heaven on Their Minds.
That's the one.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Judas is good. That's a
meaty role.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but
I
it's
a
hard
lot
to
about
not think the Ben Vereen Judas,
yep.
Personally.
And, you know, we interviewed Ben Vereen here on the show.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was one of my favorite interviews. So, Asaf, you've been back here, but haven't you been backstage with
I
us
have.
Before? You have.
A lot of times, at
so
least.
We know everything there is to know about you. What
do we?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So what I've been asking people that have been here a lot is what do you like to do outside of your theatrical and improvisational pursuits? What's your passion outside of that?
I'm doing a lot more writing. I came into theater from a writing background. Mm-hmm. I used to write poetry and short stories, and I'm getting back into that. I just started writing my first ever novel, which is very exciting. I've never tried even to write a novel, and working on a couple of screenplays. And so that's something that I fill my time with.
So did you write an outline? Are you an outline writer, or do you let the story tell itself?
I'm not an outline writer. I'm very much, let me start with what's most interesting about this idea for me and then outline around that. Because if I think outline first, it's really easy for it to become a little too mechanical. And so I drift in and out of structure.
So what do you love about writing?
I don't know what I like. I like there are things that I like about each story, and it's like, well, if I don't write it, it's not going to happen. So that's very much what it is. Improv has made it harder for me to write because I'm so used to collaborating that just sitting by myself and writing something has become very hard. So finding that again, because it used to be such a big part of my life, writing. I used to be so prolific when I was in high school and college, and then it drifted away because improv, we're writing on our feet. So I like getting back to that.
Anybody else write?
Yeah, I try to write poetry. I write songs as well, so I'm trying to get more into the lyrical aspect of poetry instead of the musical aspect of just harmonies, melodies, all of that.
Mm-hmm. I used to write a long time ago, but, you know, with going to college.
Engineering
just kind of ruins it.
Damn engineering.
I've got like, I don't know, 20 screenplays that just start the first page and then never end.
So many dreams dashed
on
the rocks made of engineering diplomas.
All those engineer hats sitting out somewhere.
Outside the train.
Hiding literary masterpieces. So of all three of you, in terms of writing, and even when you did write, pencil and paper, computer, what'd you use?
Pencil and paper.
Paper, pencil?
Paper pencils, the most desirable, but phone.
I used to use, what?
Phone. It's on me at all times.
No. You write on your phone or you dictate on your phone?
Both.
Oh my gosh.
Both.
So do you do the thumb thing?
Yeah, I also have a keyboard. So like I'll have a satchel, and so I can just kind of quickly access.
All right. I'll have to say that's the first.
All right.
I've not heard that before. What about you, Asaf?
Computer, because I type much faster than I can write, and I think very quickly. So,
I like computer as a creative tool to write because I come from pre-internet days as well, and when I started working on a computer versus a typewriter, you were able to just gush out everything, vomit everything out on the page, and go back and clean it up, as opposed to typewriters made that really difficult. And I was never very good at pen and paper.
Yeah.
So that's all I want to say about that.
There are a lot of people that say that writing is a far more visceral experience, and so that's beneficial to the writing process.
Yep.
But
well, cool. Well, I am so glad that you guys came and joined us back here amongst the dumpsters and backstage. And if you listen really carefully right now, over the bees, you can, or under the bees, you can hear Judas's song from Jesus Christ Superstar as we head back into the theater where the air conditioning is on, hopefully.
Is this the Carl Anderson version?
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. Excellent. Well, we'll see you guys later. The slime and the slime and the slime and the mud.